Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system which is usually in the bottom right hand corner to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Welcome to Becoming Heisenberg. It's Entertainment Talk's podcast for Breaking Bad on AMC and Netflix. I'm your host, Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is David. How's it going?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Excellent, excellent. So everything's back on track this week. Geektown Radio is back this week. Our Breaking Bad podcast is back. And David, of course, is back as well because he's on those two things. So yes, we shall continue. It's interesting that we did choose to still do a podcast and then you went away, but now we're just sort of resuming where we left off. Anyway, this is for Season 3, Episode 2, Caballo Sin Nombre is what I'm going to go with. You could have called this episode Pizza, you could have called it Breaking, you could have called it a few different things. But anyway, what did you think of this episode?
I like this episode. I mean, the notorious pizza scene is in this episode, which I do feel so sorry for the people that own that house. Because they then spent the next 5 years having pizzas thrown on their roof. The poor people that in Albuquerque that own the Walter White house, they actually had to put a fence up around it to stop people doing it, apparently. But it's got some good bits in this. There's, you know, you're starting to get really into, I think, what we remember of Breaking Bad at this point, of like, you know, there's more Saul, there's more Mike, there's more Gus. It's getting into that whole sort of, you know, there's the sort of breakup, and the pizza incident is in this episode. It's sort of, I don't know, you're sort of shifting slightly into the sort of setup that takes it into the remaining seasons, if that sort of makes sense. Yeah. You know, that cast of characters are all there at this point. So, yeah, the title, by the way, means a horse with no name in English, which is the song that Walt is singing in the shower. And horse is also a slang word for heroin as well.
Nice. I thought this episode was great. This sort of felt like a season premiere, but just because we were coming back to it after a break, which is usually what you do with TV shows.
bits of it. It's interesting because one thing I'm trying to do throughout this rewatch is really analyze Walter White and see, okay, when does he become? When does he break bad? When does he become Heisenberg? Trying to look at him as a human, and you know, his humanity and the choices he's making and all those sorts of things, even right from the cold open with the policeman and that kind of thing. I kind of forgot this a little bit about Walter White, not about Heisenberg. There is kind of that silly comedy side where he's doing things like throwing pizzas on roofs and trying to crawl his way through the cobwebs of, you know, the bit underneath the house, and him trying to do things but kind of clumsily. But it's the sort of physical comedy that comes with that, not in a sort of like Mr. Bean style, but not in that sort of tone.
No,
but like he's trying to do something in a serious situation, but it's his physical way of navigating things, I suppose, or his like physical reactions to stuff, like throwing a pizza on the roof. And it's good to, I mean, we're coming up roughly to the halfway point of the show. I mean, because halfway through season three will be the halfway point, because we have five seasons. And it's going to be interesting to see how long something like that kind of lasts. Good to see, you know, these characters back and stuff. Is this Mike's introduction? I think it is. I don't remember seeing him before.
I was trying to work that out. Did we see him last season? Or I honestly can't remember.
I don't think he was in the premiere, was he, for this season? I don't think so. So that was cool to see, and the whole connection to Saul and everything. It's also having, you know, gone through Better Call Saul now, every time we see Saul and we know like his story, even the later parts of his story, we'll just say that, to return to this version of the man. Even from some of his comments about Walter and his marriage, of like, oh, move on and that kind of thing, and I'm thinking back to Kim, whereas that knowledge and that sort of experience wouldn't have been there before. So there's like other extra little parts as well. Anyway, there's other stuff to get into, but we have a recap for that anyway.
Mike was actually in the 13th episode of season two. I've just looked it up.
Oh.
He pops up. He's sent by Saul to clear out Jesse's drug paraphernalia.
Oh, yeah.
That must be after after the death of Jane. So, yes. Yeah. So he has popped up before, but I think this is the first time we sort of substantially see him, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Well, there's that information. But take a break here, we'll come back, do some housekeeping, and then we'll get into this recap. See you all in a minute. Alright, so recently on Entertainment Talk, what day was it? It came out Wednesday. The Secret Invasion finale came out for the miniseries. I still labelled it season one because it's the first season. Gave it a light must-see rating. Very interesting. People seem to be very, very angry about certain choices made in that show, and I don't quite understand all of it, but that's fine. I guess I'll talk to you off the air about it or something in a minute. But yeah, some of the reactions I've seen I did not quite expect to see, but hey, we're all entitled to our own opinions. Over on Gaming Talk this week, it was another solo episode, just because of scheduling and stuff like that. I talked about the Spider-Man 2 trailer, the awesome Spider-Man 2 trailer. That's for the game that's coming out. Talked about Xbox Game Core, which has got some interesting priced tiers. That's like the new version of Game Pass or whatever. And I also talked a bit about Toy Story, because somebody asked a question about something to do with it. So that's cool. Over on the other Gaming Talk podcast as well, Microsoft Activision deal is somewhat complete. It passed another barrier, basically. Talked about Call of Duty as well, because as well as news that Walter is wet, Call of Duty is also staying on PlayStation. So I mean, it's going to be on Switch. You're not going to put Call of Duty on Switch and then take it off of PlayStation. That just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Because they signed a new 10-year deal, there was all that kind of news. And also talked about GTA 6. There's a rumored $2 billion budget, and I tried to work out what that even means. So that was fun to do. Over on some other podcast, another Why You Should Watch podcast. This was a combined one for 911 and 911 Lone Star. Really, really, really enjoying those shows a lot at the moment, so I thought I would talk about why you should watch them. And that's a spoiler-free recommendation type of designed podcast, so there's that one. Over on the other Gaming Talk podcast recently, talked about EA Sports FC 24, FIFA 24 but renamed, and also the cover star with like 30 different people. I talked about a Black Panther game in development from a brand new studio, and also talked about Call of Duty getting superpowers because they made a deal for the boys' characters. Over on the DC Talk side of things, quite a few episodes recently. One of them was my Snyderverse trilogy and Wonder Woman review. That's my Snyderverse podcast project thing I was talking about. Must-see review, strong must-see review for Elemental, as Pixar's newest film. And that is pretty much what we've been doing on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. Right, let's go to the cold open, which is combined with the whole sort of section here. While driving on a highway, Walter White is pulled over by a police officer for his windshield. Some interesting camera work done here as well, which was cracked by the debris in the Wayfarer crash. When the police officer alludes to having the car taken, Walt angrily snaps at him, leading to him being pepper sprayed and arrested. We'll save that there for a second because that's the cold open. Yeah, it was interesting because you kind of wondered, okay, why is he pulling him over? And then the camera sort of changes a little bit, doesn't it? And reveals he's got the cracked windshield. Whereas when you'd seen him driving, you know, the minute or two before that, it looked like the situation was just perfectly normal. I'm not quite sure what to make of the situation because it's like, okay, Walter's talking about the crash that happened. Okay, that was bad. What this officer is basically telling him is you can't drive around with that on. We don't know exactly where Walter's going either. He's kind of like out in the middle of a highway or wherever he is. He's sort of in the middle of nowhere. I mean, he stops him because of the windshield, which he's allowed to do. And then Walter does get continuously aggravating towards him. And he warns him and then he pepper sprays him. So, because I was trying to watch this scene and think, like, okay, who's in the right, who's in the wrong? You know, I think it's the policeman. Because, okay, he does have the cracked windshield. I suppose, like, if he'd have said, oh, I'm on my way to get it fixed or something. But then he doesn't say that. He doesn't say that to him. Because, like, what else is Walter supposed to do? But then Walter doesn't explain where he's going to the officer. He just goes on and on about, like, oh, the thing was over my house and, you know, it was all bad. And the officer's like, yeah, cool, it was bad for a lot of people, is essentially his reaction.
Yeah.
So what did you think of this anyway?
I don't know. I think it is partly a slightly overzealous cop because you could have let him off with a warning and said, okay, yeah, you know, you need to get it fixed. And let him go on his way and not cited him for it. I mean, whilst the cop's technically correct, he was being a hard ass about it, and you kind of think you could have maybe let him off and, yeah, you know. So, yes, technically the cop was correct, although I think he could have given Walt a little bit of leeway and not escalated the situation in the way that he did. So, I think, yes, technically the cop is right, but he could have handled it better, I think, would be my reaction to that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because obviously, you know, what Walt's trying to say is it was traumatic and, you know, I just haven't had a chance to get it fixed yet. And the cop is right. It's like, well, you can't drive around like that. You know, he could have just said, I'll let you off with a warning, but, you know, you do need to go and get it fixed. And left it at that.
Mm.
So, yeah, it seems like, yes, I mean, you're right, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's the cold open. Hank picks him up from the station, and Walt tells him about his separation from Skylar. Walt also tells Saul Goodman, this is a bit later on, who believes Skylar won't tell the police to avoid consequences. Consequences against her. He suggests Walt find another woman, which is very interesting considering what happens to Saul, and continue with his trade. But Walt refuses, leading to Saul calling to Mike, who begins staking out the White House, which is later on. Yeah, that's the thing with, like, with Walter and with Skylar, I suppose, because Walt can't really properly, obviously he can't tell his brother what he's been up to, because he's a DEA agent and all that kind of thing, and he can't explain, like, why he's been kicked out and stuff. Just like the same thing with, later on with Walt Jr., which I think he's gone back to now, hasn't he? So, but no, these were quite good scenes. It's very interesting to see Saul like this, though, and like, hey, you can just, you know, I mean, yeah, when you get, let's say, rejected by somebody, or you break up with somebody, one of the usual things somebody will say to you is like, oh, there's plenty more fish in the sea or something.
Yeah,
that's essentially what Saul's trying to say to Walter, but in his, like, hey, you can just move on, sort of thing. And I found that to be quite interesting. So what do you think of these bits?
Yeah,
here?
It is right. It hits slightly differently given that we know Saul's history now. And we know what happened to him. So, yeah. But it is interesting seeing you mean in full Saul Goodman mode, having seen that sort of evolution in Better Call Saul. So, yeah. And you can see why Walt clearly is against that. Because, you know, you would be. It's his wife. So, you know, and they've got a grown kid and a baby, and yeah, it's a very different situation. So yeah, it was a good scene though, and he's sort of, you know, the only thing that Saul is, you know, because what goes God, it's a disaster, and the only thing Saul's going on about is the fact that, oh well, she won't go to the police. It's like, well, yeah, not that's not really what Walt's bothered about. He's bothered about the fact that he's lost his family, you know. So
And kicked out of his own house and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jesse stops by his old house and discovers that his parents have had it renovated and have it put up for sale. Offended that his father won't let him see the property, Jesse approaches Saul with a plan to buy the house from his parents. Not a bad idea. Saul offers Jesse's parents $400,000 cash for their $875,000 house. Their reaction to this is great. I'm like, what the hell? This is like nowhere near what we want. House on behalf of the anonymous buyer. They are outraged by the offer until Saul threatens to reveal the house contained a meth lab at one time, which wasn't written down, which the Pinkmans fraudulently failed to disclose when they put the house for sale. Frightened that this will entangle the house in a legal action and make it sell for far less, because obviously, you know, that would devalue it. Jesse's parents agree. After the sale is complete, Jesse confidently walks into the house as its owner of his parents. I thought this was great, just like, because they think he's come to just bother them or something, right? I was oh, what's Jesse doing here again? And is he going to try and sneak in and do something? No, and it was just like, yeah, like, hey, the buyers are expected any minute. You can't be here because he's going to bother the situation and, like, probably ask this person questions or, you know, might do whatever to them. No, it's him. I thought that was quite brilliant. It's interesting as well to see, because it's kind of two different reactions from his parents, because you get the first bit, right, where Jesse goes up to the house and sort of sees what's up. And there's a little bit of an attempt of reconciliation of like, oh, could I come by some time? And like, you can clearly see I'm looking better and more healthy, so I'm trying to get on the straight and narrow. Could I come by for like a chat and some dinner or something? And his dad's got this look of like, maybe we could do that at some point. And then he just turns up at the wrong time, and, you know, but it's actually him. But then the later scene, it's like, Jesse, you have to go away, you have to go now, that they're coming, and there is no, that sense of reconciliation is sort of gone, I suppose. But no, I yeah, the two funny bits here is Jesse like confidently walking up and being like, "Hey, I've got the keys, it's me," and the other bit with Sol and his offer. Whenever I look at something like this, it does make me think of when like, well, particularly with Sheikh Jesse, I'm trying to buy Man United and like how those discussions sort of go. And when like a team's trying to buy a player or something, and how the negotiation sort of situations, I'd assume nothing like this happens where it's like a way below their sort of offer, but it just like Sol's confident reaction as well of like, he's got this ace card, right, of this meth lab, and yeah, just the way it all plays out, it was brilliant. So what did you think?
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it's classic Sol stuff, you know, of finding that devious little hole to crawl through. The reaction that Jesse has, that smug grin that Jesse has on his face when he walks in the house as well, knowing the fact that this house that they essentially trashed with the meth lab has just been renovated by his parents for the cost of, I mean, they say in the meeting of like that, you know, the 400,000 was about what the renovations cost. They've just made the money back on the renovations, and he's essentially got a brand new renovated house for the price of the renovations, essentially. It's just like, I really like that scene. I think this is the final appearance of Jess's parents as well. I mean, they basically at this point after that cut off all contact, I think. I
thought Jesse tried to see them later.
I think maybe he does, but I think this is the last time we actually see the parents in this season. They do pop up again in El Camino, the movie. But right. I think
that might be what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, this is the last time we actually see them in the show, I think. But I love just the sort of the back and forth with Sol, and yeah, it's a really great set of scenes, that.
Definitely, yeah. Walt Jr. Experiences severe difficulty understanding why his mum refuses to let Walt back in, eventually snapping at her over dinner. Skylar, meanwhile, manages to go back to working for Ted, because Holly is her name. She's been born and everything now.
Yeah.
And I assume like her maternity leave is finished, or she's come back a bit early or something. She refuses to keep signing. This bit made me laugh as well. I'll explain why in a minute. She refuses to keep signing his altered books, and drawing a parallel between Ted's and Walt's criminal acts, asks what his daughters would think if they found out his wrongdoing. Ted believes he would say he has been weak and that his actions were for the good of his family. That's usually these types of characters. I mean, Walt is literally doing what he's doing for his family. Like, that's quite clear. And then obviously there's reasons later on that get added to that. So it's like a similar sort of situation. Good of his family. She later receives a call from Walt, telling her that Walt Jr. has gone to visit him. Walt does not tell his son the truth about either, and takes him home, where he tries to appease Skylar with pizza. He also says something about breadsticks or something like that, and she's just like not impressed at all, to no avail. He later throws the pizza onto the roof, one of the classic Breaking Bad scenes. The picture for the podcast this week, by the way, is said pizza on said roof.
Because
I had to do that. Yes. Yes. Yeah, yeah. There was a picture of the cousins on the bed, and I was looking at that. And then I saw the pizza. I was like, no, I have to pick that one.
Yeah, so, no, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. In a fit of rage, and Skylar sends him a message threatening to ask for a restraining order. Yeah, so I'll just explain a little bit. The bit that made me laugh slightly, again, football's kind of on the brain at the moment, is Skylar going through this book, and she's like, you've got this here, and here, and here. I was thinking back to, you know, Man City's 115 Premier League charges. Right, and I was imagining like someone sitting down, like the Premier League sitting down with Man City and being like, you've cheated here and here and here, and you shouldn't have this Premier League title and this Premier League title. And I mean, that's kind of been swept under the rug a little bit, but I thought that was kind of interesting. Fun fact, by the way, apart from the last game of the season where they didn't need to win, they won every single game of football, or didn't lose a game of football after those charges came out. So that's interesting.
Nice.
But anyway, back to this. I suppose this is trying to do a thing of, this guy's doing something wrong. You know that Walter is as well. So is your treatment of Ted going to be different to your treatment of Walter? And then, points out that Holly's there, and they talk about their, I suppose, kids and stuff. And then, how would they explain this sort of thing to them? Ted doesn't really, and it's quite predictable for him to kind of do this. He doesn't really come out with a sort of, I will do this or this. It's just sort of, I'm just doing this for this reason, and I'm going to kind of walk away now. So, I do remember what happens to Ted, but it'd be interesting to see, get a reminder of how we get to there from here. Just on the Ted and Skylar stuff here, what did you think of that?
Yeah, it is interesting because she's sort of probing him for these kind of similarities. I mean, you can tell when she's asking Ted that what she's asking about really is Walt and trying to get into sort of Walt's mind via Ted. But and the crimes are slightly different in that, selling meth is incredibly damaging to a lot of people that are addicted to that substance, whereas essentially cooking the books is kind of ripping off the tax man and the government, which, I mean, so they are sort of different types of crimes. But the thing she's sort of like, but and both of them are doing it for their families. I mean, and I think Ted in that situation is like, I'm just trying to keep my head above water. He's got this business that he's not that I'm condoning tax fraud, but you there is you can see he's trying to just keep his business afloat and keep everybody employed and all that sort of stuff. He's not. He, at least that's what he's claiming. He's not doing it just like out of greed. He's doing it because otherwise the business would go under. Whereas, Walt's actions are slightly different. I mean, yes, that was the original reason was to make money for his family, but as we know, as the season goes on, it becomes more about just making the money. So yeah, I thought that was interesting though. Skylar sort of probing him, trying to get into Walt's mind there. With the pizza thing actually is kind of interesting because that was apparently done in one take, and with no special effects. It's done in one take, and Bryan Cranston couldn't. Bryan Cranston couldn't actually repeat it. Like they tried to do it again, and he just couldn't get it right a second time. So that he's ended up doing it on the one take. Of course, with the pizza like that, for it to land like that, I mean, pizzas are usually sliced, and that I mean, this shows you the level of attention to detail that they have on this show, because pizza's obviously usually pre-sliced. That one obviously wasn't, otherwise it wouldn't have flown up in like a as a whole unit. It would have broken apart when you tried to throw it up there. There is an episode in season four where Badger goes to buy a pizza, and he's with Jesse. And Jesse doesn't understand why the pizza isn't pre-sliced in this place where they go to buy the pizza. And Badger explains that it's a gimmick of that pizzeria, particularly that the pizzas aren't pre-sliced to save customers money. And Jesse rightly goes about like how that's just ridiculous. So they actually put an in-canon reason for the fact that the pizza wasn't sliced when they threw it, which I really like, because I assume they probably looked on the internet, people talking about it, and just going, well, why wasn't it pre-sliced? And then they put a reason for it into the show as well, which I just thought thought that was great. And as I mentioned, the poor people that own that house end up having to put a fence around it because of the fact that people would turn up at their house and throw pizzas on the roof. So,
I suppose if it was, he would have maybe thrown like the box or something.
Well, yes,
possibly.
I mean, they could have done it with the box, but it didn't quite have the same effect of an actual just
no,
poor pizza.
No. But it's a good classic scene. so there's that bit. Yeah, the Skylar scene itself. Yeah, she's kind of in full control. Walt is just completely, you know, full of rage as we see. I think there's even a, it's a bit later, isn't there? Where, because he wakes up. By the way, is he in a hotel? Is it in an apartment? Like, where actually is?
It's an apartment, I think.
Okay. I couldn't quite sort of, because he's been in there for a few episodes.
Yeah.
But I couldn't quite work that out. Yeah, he sort of wakes up and he's got like food all over the place and stuff, and that's when he gets the restraining order. But yeah, she's in complete control, and I mean, yeah, Walt feels like he does have to bring Walt Jr. back and all that kind of thing. I suppose for Walt, maybe he kind of thinks like, I mean, she's got the upper hand because he's the one who's like done something wrong, and she could maybe do something about it. This is a situation where you feel just sorry for Walt Jr. really, because
yeah,
you know, he doesn't quite understand why, which is understandable, but neither of his parents can really explain why, and he's having to sort of just say to him, you know, we're just fallen out, we still love you very much, but we're just fallen out. So any thoughts on the Skylar stuff?
No, I mean, yeah, more the Walt Jr. thing of yeah, I mean, you do really feel for Walt Jr. because it is difficult, obviously, with any kind of breakup in a family. And then, but with this, there is no way of explaining what actually happened and why, you know, and Skylar comes across as the bad guy because as far as Walt Jr. can see, his father's done nothing wrong, and he's gone through this awful thing of having cancer, and then she's kicked him out, you know. So,
yeah. Furious, Walt proceeds to break into the house in order to forcibly move back in, unaware that Mike is installing surveillance equipment literally a few feet from him in the house. Unbeknownst to Walt, the cousins, they're called Lionel and Mark Salamanca, approach their uncle Hector Salamanca, who is now living in a retirement home following Tuco's death, which was back in season 1, 2, somewhere early on. He gives them Walt's name and eventually finds his house. The cousins prepare to kill Walt with an axe. They're just like really casually sitting on his bed, but before they can approach him in the shower, an onlooking Mike has Gus Fring text them about a faked drug deal, Polios, and then prompting them to leave. Again, just very, they're just very casual about this whole thing. They're very fascinating characters to watch, these two, because they, I can't remember if they say any lines in the whole series. They might say one or two things, but they don't really talk, and it's all just kind of, they walk around with those boots and the suit and everything, and they have, you know, different weapons and stuff, and they just kind of go about their business. Even the way that, like, they stroll into this retirement home, like, you'd look at these two people and you go, okay, they clearly look intimidating. Just like the way they're dressed, the manner of how they're walking around and that kind of thing. They're very interesting characters. And then you see the bit where, like, he picks up the eye, which I think is from the teddy thing. Mm-hmm. That's all the season 2 cold open things, and he gives it this like curious look, because even with like facial expressions, they don't do all that much, like they do a couple of things now and again, but I find that interesting to have like a mysterious character to try and read the emotions of, a little bit like when you're watching Mandalorian and that type of stuff, like there's a face under the helmet. Same thing with like Isaac in Dead Space, and you're trying to get a read of them. So I quite like that from a character. That's what Halo got so wrong, because they had like the helmet off for most of the show, and they sort of weren't supposed to do that, but anyway, because it's supposed to be the same kind of mysterious sort of thing. It's interesting with Walt, like, because again, this is where the sort of physical comedy comes in, of him crawling through the thing and trying to get up there, and then, you know, clumsily sort of making his way into the house, and then just like really casually in the shower. He's got no idea these people are here. He's got no idea Mike's even here. And then strolls out the shower. I did, because he does look at the eye, doesn't he? And I did think, like, has he noticed it's been moved slightly? But he didn't seem bothered by it at all. But yeah, it's a very good kind of final scene to the episode as well. What did you think of it?
I mean, the cousins are great characters, and it's interesting because of the fact that they don't talk, how much they can get across with just sort of looks and stuff. But yeah, the little thing with the eye, you sort of see it on the floor and then it gets picked up and then it gets kind of put on the top of Walt's suitcase, and that kind of confuses you out when he comes out of the shower. And I mean, that whole thing is kind of nice and creepy. They're just odd and slightly off kilter, which works so well for the two of them because you never quite know what they're going to do. You know, and like even when the message comes through, they don't say anything to each other. He just shows the other one the phone, and they
That's
in
it.
what comes out, and they disappear. And it's really, they're just really great characters, those two. Considering they're essentially non-speaking roles, they do occasionally say words, but it's like one or two words here and there. It's they don't really talk at all. And yeah, really interesting way to just sort of end the episode. Gus, when we get that little clip of him, I think he's actually looking at blueprints, which is a sort of foreshadowing for the super lab that's coming up as well. Yeah, when he's in the laundromat. So, yeah.
Quite exciting when you see things getting like set up in the show at this point, and we know what that's sort of for. So, yeah, it's very good. What was I going to say? I can't remember now. But no, very very good end to the episode, and we'll see. Because I was thinking, like, I don't remember Walt fighting these two. So how does this like resolve itself? And it's interesting to sort of, I think you've mentioned this before, to remember most of the show, but not certain little
Bits, yeah.
parts, yeah. And like, oh, how exactly does this get to this? And then you get reminded of it. It's all part of this interesting journey. So, but now that we're, the thing that kind of popped into my mind as like a new rewatch element was Sol in this episode, of like knowing, because none of that was written or decided or anything at that point,
Yeah.
was it? So, because obviously, Better Call Saul started after Breaking Bad finished, didn't it? I can't remember when it was like ordered and greenlit, if Breaking Bad was still on the air, because obviously that's where the ideas would have started coming out. But I can't remember the exact dates for those things. If Breaking Bad had finished when they came out with that idea, but no, having that kind of knowledge for Saul is going to be very interesting, kind of going forward. So. Anyway, let's get some feedback, some emails and whatnot, if you'd like to write in about the episode or the show or anything else like that. Matthew@entertainmenttalk.org, Twitter eTalkUK, or X as it's called. But anyway, Twitter eTalkUK, and there's information in your show notes. Mike writes in and says, I'll leave this here for when you return to Breaking Bad. What do you think the show could slash should have done with Maria? I don't think she's a bad character, just doesn't do much. Yeah, I think that's a good way to summarize her. One bit we didn't kind of mention is that they get invited to dinner at the Walt's house, the White's house, and they kind of storm off and stuff, and well, not storm off, they'd sort of leave and all that, and Skyler basically says, like, no, it's not really your business, and doesn't really give them answers. Because Hank and Maria trying to sort of talk about the situation, and Walt Jr. gets, you know, annoyed. She calls Skyler, you know, some names and stuff. What could they should have done with Maria? I don't know. I don't know that, like, looking across the whole show. Because the thing, okay, you've got your two couples, right? You've got Skyler and Walter. Obviously, Skyler plays a major part in that. Hank is obviously, you know, he's the DEA brother that Walt is trying to avoid finding out about what's going on, because that would be very, very bad. And there isn't really that sort of, because Marie's character doesn't work at all in the same way that Skylar's does. And obviously you got Hank throughout, like, he's not just looking for, you know, he doesn't even know about that yet. But like, because he's looking for the other people. So it's like, and I think one thing that does step Maria down a little bit as a character is the whole thieving storyline, because I don't really remember that getting added up to much. I mean, it's at this point that, like, where we are in the series here, I don't think they returned back to that. That was like a early season one, season two kind of thing. Or if, even if she does, it's very brief and it isn't very. I don't remember it being particularly consequential, unlike all the stuff that happens with Walter and Skylar and Hank. So I'm not really sure what you could have done. I wouldn't take her out of the series, because then I think you have a different, because she's really there to kind of support Hank. So if you take her out of the show and Hank's now this single guy, like literally single, I don't know that you get the same version of Hank. But then it doesn't give her an individual purpose, whereas Skylar does have one. Plus, Skylar's got like her stuff with Ted, and there's the whole clash of like what Ted's doing and what Walt's doing, and the discussion of their kids that keeps going. That has like a big impact and stuff. So I don't really know, but I don't necessarily know that you need something to, like, if you try to put something in there for Marie to do, I can't think of anything that would actually, like, if you get rid of the thieving storyline and you replace that with something else, I don't know that you actually need to do that, because, well, first of all, Breaking Bad doesn't need to be better, because I already think it's the best show I've seen. I don't know that it would add much. So like, we all kind of understand that about Marie's character, but she's who she is, I suppose. And what do you think?
I think we've have talked a little bit about this before. The issue with Marie is, I mean, she is technically main cast, not recurring cast, but she just doesn't have that much to do in the show. And they've sort of, you know, they had that kleptomaniac storyline that they put in there for to sort of give us something to do, but even that felt a bit forced and unnecessary. You know, so you'd almost have been better to have made her just a recurring character and, you know, not give her and her as much to do. I don't think you necessarily needed her there as much. And I think you're right. I think if Hank hadn't been married, it would have very much changed his kind of character dynamic. You know, so I think she needed to be there, but I don't know whether you do need to give her more to do than what she actually had.
Maybe like a background job or something,
Yeah.
like a job that she's, because I don't know or can't remember what job she's actually got, but something to where you have a casual scene where someone's, you know, the casual sort of weekend of like, oh,
But
what did you do during the week, and somebody,
yeah.
I don't know.
I don't, I, but yeah, that's the point. I don't know how much you need to build out that character to add to things, you know, because you only have a finite amount of time. So,
Yeah, it's almost like you should have taken away a little bit more from the character to make the character better. I know that sounds kind of strange, because like, if
yeah.
you take out the thieving thing and don't replace it with anything, I think that does make Maria a better character, but it doesn't add anything to her. It takes away from her.
Yeah.
I can't think of too many characters in TV that are in that situation of like, they don't really have a thing they do. They're a supporting character for somebody else.
Yeah.
I would say it was an early, like, the thieving storyline and all that. That was an early experimental mistake, I think. But then clearly the show and Vince and everybody learned from it, and then they didn't really do that again. So, Caroline says, as a black woman, I find this show dot 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 interesting to watch, especially with it being a white male dominated cast. it is, if you look at it. No complaints, just observations. How do you think this and other shows compare to today's cultural standards? This is something that gets brought up a few times, like when you talk about classic shows, certainly. And even though Breaking Bad isn't a classic yet, it's not really old enough to be a classic. Obviously, it's a pop culture phenomenon, but yeah, it is like when you look at the main man, Walter, and then Hank, and then Jesse, and then Mike. I know Gus is obviously a black man. And you have got, you know, white female characters. You've got Skyler is obviously a major character. Marie, like I said. You've got Jesse's friends. They're not there as much, but they're still, again, white male leads. It's an element of the time. I mean, I remember when these sorts of conversations started coming up, and it was, oh, Friends is offensive, and Fools and Horses is offensive, and all this and all that kind of stuff. The way I look at that now, and I don't think my opinion will really change, is we have to look at those shows to learn from them, and you can't, like, okay, say you take Friends, for example. Let's say you find it offensive in a modern-day scenario, right? Which I don't personally think it is. It's got a few, let's call them wobbly bits. The way that certain characters talk about certain things is wobbly, I would say, but not bad, not outright offensive. Or things like, I know it's a bit newer, but like In Between Us, the way certain characters in that show talk about something. But what's the solution? You reboot Friends, you rewrite the whole thing, recast it, like that would be a disaster. You can't recast that cast. Like Fools and Horses, you couldn't get somebody else to play Del Boy. Are you going to, in 10, 20 years, reboot Breaking Bad, do it again, brand new cast? That won't work. There's certain things like that, or like a Back to the Future. Like, you couldn't get somebody else to play Michael J. Fox's role. I also think that would be fairly disrespectful. I think he's talked about that a bit recently, of like, hey, this is our film. You can reboot it if you want, but like, you know, that was our thing. Mm-hmm. There's certain things, because I know we live in a day and age of like reboots and remakes and all that kind of mumbo jumbo. Some of it's good, some of it's completely unnecessary. But there's certain things you just don't need to touch. And they are, okay, we can look back at what certain characters say in some of those certain shows, and we can make sure that we change those elements. Because you can't go back and rewrite that stuff. And you can't go back and, like, redo Friends again with these characters in their 50s trying to play characters in their late 20s, early 30s. Like, it's not reasonable at all. I know you've mentioned like 40 Towers before as well, as kind of like one of those from that era. We live in a day and age where we do have more diversity, more sort of representation and things like that, and that's just how things are now, and they weren't back then. And even as a white guy, and I've talked about this on a few different podcasts, you look at that and observe how it is. But I don't think there's any use in sort of like, oh, Friends should be, well, it's not on the air. You can't take Friends like off the air because it's not on the air anymore. It finished ages ago. Just take it and learn from what's there. But it's just a product of its time that you can't really change that. Same thing with Breaking Bad. It was written in the cultural standards of 2008 and 2013, and that's just kind of what that is. So, what do you kind of think of all this type of stuff?
I think you look at something like Breaking Bad, and I think it was, you know, the cast was the cast. I mean, I don't know whether they what they were particularly looking for on the casting sheets. I don't know what they particularly
like casting said, stuff. Yeah.
You know, whether they actually had race requirements or anything like that on the casting sheets, of whether they, you know, I don't know. And it may just be a case of the people that showed up and nailed the auditions were the people that are in the show. You know, and it's one of those things that if you are an actor of color, are you, you know, if you're a black actor or an Asian actor, are you going to want to get a role over somebody else because you're black or you're Asian? I don't you know, to fill some sort of quota. That seems, I don't know, I sort of find that offensive as well if I was in that position, I think. But then I'm not, I don't know. So I, you know, and it's different with something like Friends, because if you were casting Friends right now, you would probably look for a much di more diverse group of people
Like How I
than
Met Your
what,
Father.
yeah, like How I Met
That's a
Your Father
perfect example.
is a great example of that, because you know the original was a group of white friends, and the new series is a much more diverse group. And I think if you know, if you were casting Friends again now, you would look for a more diverse group of people because it reflects reality more, I think. You know, reflects the world today a bit more. But it's one of those things that with this, I don't know. You know, there are people of all sorts of different backgrounds in this. Yes, they're not necessarily all the main cast. I mean, with the exception of the brilliant Giancarlo.
Yeah, exactly. One of the main black leads of the show is like one of the best characters as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Because Giancarlo's just awesome. So, yeah. I mean, I know we haven't seen a ton of him at this point, but obviously he'll be pretty important going forward. Quite important, we'll say. Yes. So, yeah.
It's yeah, the diversity in casting is a tricky thing because it does rather depend on what the show is, you know.
It also
And I
depends on
think,
what you're writing for that character. Like
yeah, and I.
if you're forcibly trying to put a black character, let's say, into a story, but then you write them terribly,
Yeah, exactly.
which I've seen before. I've also
Yeah.
seen the opposite where like I pointed out on the 911 podcast about Marjan and like one of her storylines, and I said that was that storyline wasn't good just because of who she is. It was good because it was well written. And if you take that exact same storyline and you write it badly, then it's just not enjoyable because it's,
Yeah.
well, if you've got bad TV that's written badly, then you've just got bad TV that's written badly. So,
Yeah. And I mean, it's one of those things. You've got, you know, you are dealing. It's a tricky thing to do because you've got to look at, well, is there a need for a particular race in, you know, or background in a particular role? If there isn't, then make it open. You know, it should be open to everybody. You know, I mean, and there are many, many parts where you've got you know, people from all sorts of different backgrounds in lead cast, regardless of, you know, what the character was in source material. Or you know, I mean, a great example, Shawshank Redemption. You know, I mean, Morgan Freeman's role in that, which is a very defining, brilliant role, and he was absolutely perfect for that part. But if you actually read the book, I believe the character was a sort of, you know, 6'5", red-headed, like giant person in the book. You know, I mean, which, because I think the character's called Red, and that's the reason for it. When they gave that role to Morgan Freeman, and he was absolutely brilliant at it. So there are points where you can, even though the source material says one thing, you can change the character and it still be absolutely superb. You know, but and there are many, many roles. Like I say, you know, if you're recasting Friends today, you would have a much more diverse group of people because of the fact that that reflects reality.
Yeah,
So
as opposed to 1994, when is it 94? Yeah, 94 to 2004, when the show was on. I was just thinking as well, like let's say you do Breaking Bad today, AMC orders or Sony AMC orders a series called Breaking Bad, and you get to the police scene at the beginning of this episode, and you do that scene, but Walter White is black. Then you open up a bit of a discussion about like because obviously there's excuse me, things going on in America with like police brutality and all that kind of thing. That's it. I mean, that scene would probably be written a bit differently as well,
it also,
but
I mean, the whole story changes to a certain extent as well. I think if you're taking, you know, an upstanding black high school chemistry teacher that gets cancer and then his first reaction is to turn to drug dealing, I actually think that there is a portion of the population that would find that being problematic in itself as well. So because there is a sort of negative stereotype that would come along with that. So, I mean, it's tricky, you know. And it's the same with Jesse. You know, if you'd had Jesse as being sort of a black high school dropout that had gone into drug dealing, doesn't that then become a sort of stereotype? So, you know, it's one of those things that it might have been interesting to have, say, you know, Hank could have been of a different ethnicity. You could have done it.
Yeah, possibly.
But I don't know. It's that there are also problems. Had you changed the sort of stereotype? Had you changed the ethnicity of some of the lead cast, that would also have potentially brought in problems as well. So I don't know.
No, I get what you mean, and again, that's why it's a product of its time in 2008, because that's you know what they did in 2008. I still say the best example I've seen, at least on TV, I don't know about films, on TV, of a I'll call it a diversity storyline, but done right, the idea was actually quite cool. It wasn't just like a decent idea, it was actually a very good, I thought it was a creative idea, is, and I don't consider this a spoiler, is in Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist season 2, I think it's about episode 5 when the storyline starts happening. I think it's about a 3 or 4 episode arc, and they're sort of split across the season a little bit, when I think it's Simon, they've got this face recognition app. This is because that's the company that Zoe and the other characters sort of work at. What was it called? SparkPoint, I think it was.
Yes.
In that, and one of the problems they had with that was because they were trying to, obviously they were trying to build the app and test it, and it recognized a white person's face because there was plenty of white people in the building to test it, but because it was only him and like a few other black people or something in the building.
Yes, I remember.
When they launched it, it had trouble recognizing people of color because it hadn't been tested enough. Now that's an interesting idea because it leans into workplace, you know, diversity, and also it feeds directly into what that company is, which is a tech company who's testing something. And then the character, I think his name's called Simon, launched like a whole campaign, and it didn't feel over the top or forced or anything. It actually felt quite natural. That's probably the best example of that I've seen. And the other characters got involved, like Zoe's a white woman, she's obviously the lead character of the show, and it slotted in so well, and it was actually really brilliant. That's the sort of really good ideas that you kind of want. So that was quite I like having these discussions as well. These are quite interesting discussions to me. So there we go. If anybody else has got any examples of like good or bad stuff, because I've seen some bad stuff where it's like, okay, you're just trying to just put this in the show just because, and you're not writing it well, and it's bad. So there we go. Anyway, that's it for this week's episode. We'll be back. We will be back next week. No more breaks. We should be able to go straight through now. And we've got 11 episodes left, because it's 13, I believe. So we'll be back next week for that. And we'll see what happens next in the show. I mean, we know, but you might not if it's your first time through. Anyway, entertainmenttalk.org, podcast platforms, entertainment talk, TV, games, films, main night podcasts. So look out for all that. You can use word of mouth, social media, let other people know about what we're doing, what we're up to over here. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers, ad-free podcast review options. Look at that as well if you'd like to. TV and film news. As we said, David is back in full swing of things, such as Geek Town Radio on Tuesdays and geektown.co.uk. David, you're back with that now. So what's going on over there?
Well, you were on the podcast this week,
I was.
so we are back with the podcast. We talked about Quantum Leap, we talked about The Witcher, we talked about Foundation, we talked about the various strikes in America, particularly the SAG-AFTRA strike, which has started since we went off. You talked about Poker Face and Handmaid's Tale and the 911s. Went through all the news from San Diego Comic Con and did lots of sort of renewals and pickups and some Superman casting as well. So there's all that on Geek Town Radio this week, which is episode 389. You can go and find that on your favorite podcast platform or over on geektown.co.uk. There's also lots of news going up on the website. You can find regular air date updates and news about upcoming TV shows and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, we've got all the air dates for US and UK TV premiere dates for upcoming TV shows. You can go find the lists of those on the website as well. That's geektown.co.uk.
Excellent. Yes, excellent. So you're going to check that out, geektown.co.uk on Tuesdays. Sorry, Geek Town Radio on Tuesdays and geektown.co.uk. Bex as well, you can find her. She's very busy at the moment, but go and support what she's doing. Trust the Bytes, BYTES, across everything, I think, now. So go and check out what she's up to. Me over on Twitch at eTalk UK and YouTube Entertainment Talk Plays. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next time. Goodbye.
Bye.